Here at WHFR, it's the one time out of the year where we ask for you, our loyal listeners and listeners out there, to pledge a pledge of support of WHFR, independent radio that brings you local artists, independent artists, just people you don't get to hear out everywhere. And we're not going to try to sell you anything. We're not a commercial station. So that's why we have to ask for support. We get 40% of our funds from Henry Ford College, but the other 60% of our operating costs comes from you, our loyal listeners. And we need your support. So if you would call in at 313-845-9676 extension 1, or you can go to our secure online site at www.whfr.fm. And it's a secure website for WHFR. You can jump on our stream. We've got the stream up and running. And that's there. And I'm DJ Kitty Love. Thank you for listening to this little segment here at the Station Making Waves. And we're going to go into the wonderful new WHFR Journal. Thanks again. If you could pledge online, it'd be really great. Call WHFR.fm.
The following edition of the new WHFR Journal has been pre-recorded and edited for time and for content. Enjoy.
Welcome to this Radiothon Week edition of the new WHFR Journal. I'm Susan McGraw, along with Alan Mazurek joining me in studio. Hello, Alan. What a crazy week it's been. Oh, my goodness.
A little bit of everything weather-wise. Yeah. And certainly a crazy week here in the studios. Lots of great live music, special programming, and thankfully, lots of pledges coming in to support the station. But there's still room for more.
Absolutely. We're going to share ways to connect with us. Most probably easy thing to do. And there's a button that says Radiothon 2018. You click it takes us to a secure website and
you
so on.
You can't miss
so
it.
Forth.
It's right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Easy enough. Also, telephone number 313-845-9676. 313-845-9676 is the number to call should you feel motivated to make your pledge of support right now. We have an action-packed show. We're going to be joined with Mayor Jack O'Reilly, who has been since 2007 the mayor of Dearborn, and he's going to be sharing insight on all sorts of things happening in our community and even farther out. In addition, we're going to talk about a non-traditional career seminar that's coming up next week. We'll have Diane Green and Brenda Hildreth from our counseling department here at HFC in to talk a little bit about this seminar. It's all about health careers and opportunities for people not typically serving in health careers to consider coming in, getting some free information, a free lunch as well, and seeing how this might benefit them. All that, and I think we're going to talk to Josh for a minute or two about local sports.
Indeed. Did you say lunch?
I did.
Darn it. Well, you know what? Lunch can wait. We're going to talk to the mayor up next here on the new WHFR Journal.
WHFR Dearborn.
On this Radiothon edition of the new WHFR Journal, we are so excited to keep the tradition going of having our esteemed mayor, Jack O'Reilly, on our radio show. The new WHFR Journal is new and interesting because of things that we learn about and that we can then share with you, our loyal listeners. So we are excited to see what's going on, not only in the life of Jack O'Reilly, but also in the city that he represents so aptly. So, Mayor O'Reilly, welcome. We're so glad you could be here today by phone.
Thank you, Susan and Alan. Happy to be here. This is unusual because every year it's been in person, but this is the modern age, and we have to go with it.
We do, and we know it's a busy time for everybody, so we're glad to have the time with you, even this way. We have a picture of you propped up that we're looking. I'm kidding. I'm joking about that. But yeah. I'm kidding.
That would be brutal for you.
Oh, that's great. Well, when we talk about issues facing the city and opportunities to sort of brag about, you know, they tend to fall into a few different categories. One tends to be new developments, things going on. The other tends to be funding related, and often that ties into things going on in the state of Michigan that are impacting our corner of the world here. And, you know, we really can't talk about the city of Dearborn without talking about Ford Motor Company. So where would you like to jump in to get onto some of these issues?
Well, we'll hit Ford because obviously what they're doing right now in Dearborn is sort of a once-in-a-lifetime project. I mean, they're basically going to reinvest in every piece of parcel they have, and so not the not the you know, where they're already have created a wonderful environment down at the Rouge, but this is everything else they own in town. So they're really putting a tremendous amount of resources and money into the next Dearborn, if you can call it that, at least from the point of view of their properties.
Mm, interesting. So what will we expect to see by way of a timetable? Is there some specific thing that is sort of like a kickoff? It seems like we're in that phase already.
Right. We're going to be kicking off in early summer, June probably, with the project in the West Dearborn. That one is really the sexy one in a way, because it's they're looking to create an environment there for workers that are going to be part of a crew and a very creative group. And so they're trying to really match the kind of creative environment that we've seen in Silicon Valley and the East Coast and so on. So they're putting a tremendous amount into that. But that's really pales in comparison to the fact that they're in their engineering and their other facilities. They're completely, even the glass house, everything is being completely updated, reformed, made into a much more worker-friendly environment. I mean, I say that in the sense that they're really going after millennials with the kind of skills and talents that are going to be critical no matter what industry it is. So it's really, the competition has really stepped up, and Ford has stepped up in big ways.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, question about that to a certain extent, and especially obviously, you know, looking at Dearborn and talking about millennials and you know, trying to attract this next generation of talent. I saw something recently, and this was an article, I think it was in the Free Press, that you were quoted extensively in about Ford Motor Company and the possibility of renovating the Detroit Central Station on Michigan Avenue in Corktown, right there in Detroit. And just from my personal perspective, having grown up in and around the city, I thought it was actually kind of refreshing to see a mayor like sort of having some sort of regional focus and saying what's good for that facility, what's good for Ford Motor Company is also good for Dearborn as well. It seems to go contrary to, you know, what we've seen a lot. Maybe it's because Dearborn and Detroit don't have, you know, 8 lanes of some mile road separating them. You know, just curious what you feel about that, you know, in your own words for our interview.
Well, I think it's just absolutely foolish for any leader, a municipal leader in our area, to not be supportive of what others are doing, because we kind of sink or swim together. It's just crazy to think you can isolate yourself, or that what you're doing is going to be independent of what's happening in a modern, you know, environment. This is a place where we all need to work together. We need to support each other. We need to make sure that we're doing the things that are going to ensure this community is strong and a place that people are interested in being part of far into the future. And that means we have to look at everything that's going to make us a stronger region. Because that's what people look at. Investors are looking at that. You know, we already saw it. We saw a number of the large investors that came in, and they actually laid on the table what were some of the criteria they're looking for. And part of it is that kind of access to a lot of different opportunities, ways that people can interface, everything, you know, the whole environment that's created. And that train station was a beaut. I'm old enough to have actually been there when it was open and so on. And, whatever use they put to it, I don't think it'll be a train station. I can pretty much assure at least.
Yeah, right. We've got a pretty good one of those right here in Dearborn now, don't
right
we?
Yeah. Oh, yes, we've got a beaut. But my point is, what does it connect to? You actually picked a great way to look at this. If I've got a train station, but nobody else has a train station, what am I getting out of the train station? Let's get honest. We have to work together. We have to support each other. We have to make sure that we're attractive on a big scale, a national scale, not just fight within ourselves. That doesn't get us anywhere.
Yeah, we certainly don't operate in a vacuum, and the city of Detroit, with its rebirth and its incredible growth and expansion, should continue to kind of keep that energy going and cascade into other communities as well. And how wonderful that we're keeping two eyes straight on that community and seeing how it can both benefit and impact in a positive way this community as well as what we can do for them.
Well, in all communities. I mean, the whole thing is that's where we're at. We have a group in Michigan now that we're forming that starts at large communities from all over the state, and we have the leaders of those, and we're talking about how do we interact. So this is now something where, and Detroit, and Mayor Duggan's part of it, I'm part of it, other communities, but we go out to the west side of the state, we go up to the upper part of the state, and we're talking about, you know, how do we look at the state as a whole, especially because we're larger units, and so we benefit more if we see increased investment. We're trying to be a catalyst for that kind of thing. The old days are gone. This is the new age of we've got to all work together to make it work, and we can't leave even the small communities behind. They're a part of it. We either work together and make ourselves some place that becomes a destination for opportunity, or we'll just keep pedaling along at a slow pace.
Well, and it points me in the direction of, you referred to it earlier, that, you know, I mean, we're not just as Dearborn competing with other communities in Metro Detroit for talent. You know, I mean, especially as automotive has become technology, has become, you know, the computer industry to a certain extent. You mentioned Silicon Valley, and I know that when you were on our campus a couple of months ago with Dave Dubinsky from Ford Motor Land Development, kind of addressing that same issue, that it's all about being an attractive region for a new generation of talent.
That's correct. And again, we need to get back all those people who got their educations here and then went to other states. I mean, I want to win them back. I want them to come home and be part of our great you know, growth and development. Yeah. Bring our students home is the motto.
Well, and of course here it's going to, you know, certainly the big start's going to be the completion of this the Wagner Place project, which might make the western edge of Michigan Avenue a little more drivable in the foreseeable future, maybe.
Well, yeah, we'll get back to
short term pain. I know.
Yeah, short term. It happens. But yeah, that's the visible thing. That's, if you will, that's gives you a sense of what's going on. But what the average person won't see is what they're transforming within their property, you know, for the technology they need to develop, for all the things, the new skills they need to have, for the fact that, you know, they don't call themselves a car company anymore. You know, they're a mobility company. And that has a lot of information in that transition of what's going on and where things are going and what kind of talent they're going to have to recruit. So those are all part of that package of they've got to be at the cutting edge, they've got to be at the top of their craft, and that's what they're shooting at. And boy, they're on the right track, and I can't support them enough. Anything I can do to support them, to see them succeed in that for Ford, is a blessing not only for Dearborn but for the region.
Yeah. Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. is joining us by phone today on this edition of the new WHFR Journal, our radiothon edition, and we look forward to some of his thoughts about you know, some different radiothons over the years. But we are talking about the community. The term I hear coming up over and over is the term development. And you know, if you don't develop, you're kind of stuck. You're kind of at a standstill. But when it comes to things and concerns that are impacting our own community, how important and how much of an impact in a relationship with the actual state of Michigan and funding opportunities through the state are really impacting us for citizens of this community on a daily basis? How important do we find that relationship in our, you know, day-to-day living here in Dearborn?
Well, you know, I'm on the MEDC executive board, so I can comment from that very strong point is the MEDC is a filler. They're a third party to what goes on, but they can make all the difference in many of the projects we're doing, including the Ford project right here, are based on the idea of the investor puts in a pretty good chunk of money. The state comes and tries to help them leverage opportunities so that they can, you know, cut some costs and be able to really put that project on the table and get it done. And the state of Michigan, then we can get to come in, and if we've done it right and if they evaluate it and see it has merit, then they come in and bring some money to the table. That's how you're getting these projects. And whether it's Detroit, whether it's Dearborn, no matter where it is, those projects are where it starts with a sense of here's something we could do that would really be a strong driver. Then the community has to decide how much can they participate, and then together the person trying to do the project and the municipality, in our case Dearborn, will go and talk to the MEDC about, well, okay, now how can you help? What kinds of incentives do you have based on things like what's the quality of the project now in terms of is there going to have to be a lot of waste removed? Is there going to have to be a lot of investment put in underground? Those kinds of things that will then finish off the project, because obviously, most over the last 3 or 4 decades, a lot of new projects went to areas that were further out because they had no chance of running into industrial waste or industrial problems or, you know, things that would cost more money. And so they wanted, you know, really green property. But green property keeps pushing everything further and further away from the central area. So you have to then begin to have ways of having everybody come together to mitigate those past issues that would be costly, so that you can compete with attracting new buildings, new opportunities.
Well, when it relates to opportunities and then potential pushback, what kind of pressure are you facing on a regular basis from internal constituents, or are you?
Not a whole lot. I mean, you know, obviously, in these cases, most of what we're doing is we're not using general fund money for that. So if we're not taking general fund money, it means we're not diminishing the services that the citizens are getting. We're using other tools and other funding. But some of it would be some money that we have in reserve. So somebody could argue, well, just give me that back and we'll skip the whole thing. But again, for a city to grow, the city has to be able to attract new investment. I mean, that's absolutely essential. It also has to be able to make sure that it's maintaining its assets, including all of the housing and everything else, in a very effective way, so that they continue to build in value, which in our case also means tax money, quite literally. And so that's a huge thing. As you look at cities that are doing well and cities that aren't, you could go and look at what is their property value, and you're going to see a good correlation as to who's doing well and who's not. And that's another key, is making sure that you're keeping the quality of the products, the quality of the homes, the quality of businesses in good shape, and so that they can grow with the economy.
Well, and as a city that is, you know, pretty much as built out as it can get when it comes to housing stock, compared to, as you talked about, you know, other communities that might have open green space and things, that becomes especially important, I would imagine.
Oh. It's the biggest issue. That's what we've got to do, is we've got to sell our Dearborn as a place to invest, and, you know, no matter what comes, and that the overall the amenities and the slight risk that may be inherent is overcome by the greater value, also cutting costs, because now getting it to market and so on is better. I mean, you can argue both ways, and that's what will always go on, as to which is better, greenfield or reuse of brownfield.
Brownfield, right. Yeah, that's, I was trying to think of the term myself. Yep.
Yeah. And so the question is, my thing is, well, it's going to depend. It's going to depend on how good the leadership is in each of those different models, and how much we can leverage new investment or new opportunities that will mitigate that difference.
Mayor O'Reilly, you have been an elected public official here in the city of Dearborn since 1990, and our mayor of Dearborn, I know, I hated to put that context in there, but the picture that we're looking at of you is from a while ago, too, so you look great either way. What can I say?
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not worried.
But since 2007, as mayor of Dearborn, I think one of the most appealing parts of your style of working in this capacity is your ability to be sort of not only hands-on, but allowing other people to kind of get their hands on you, to be able to connect with you in a community way, in a day-to-day, being involved in local activities and so on. So absolutely a hands-on mayor, but an opportunity to be very reachable, very accessible. That's we hear that all the time as well, as one of the greatest things about what you do in your capacity. With that being said, it's been 11 years now as mayor of the city of Dearborn. Has the nature of the way people connect with you, has the nature of that changed a lot? And I don't necessarily mean technology versus face-to-face, but are the issues, do the same things kind of come up occasionally from now and then? Or are there brand new, crazy, cutting-edge things that people are confronting you with that you would have never considered 11 years ago?
I think it's always great because the public's always coming up with new ideas and they're participating, and of course we have all kinds of ways that people can be active. I mean, we've got more appointed. I think we've looked at this. We have more appointed people representing groups that inform the city than most other communities, or that participate in making decisions about it. So I think that's a good thing. The idea now, with the way that information is disseminated is the biggest challenge. If you're someone from my era, we're trying to catch up all the time with the way that people are communicating. And then also you're trying to sort out, well, where did this person get this information that they're putting out? That's an interesting phenomenon. But no, I mean, so maybe the tools have changed, but people are, when people have something positive or negative to say, they're going to get through. They want to, they're going to be heard. And I think that's the important part. And we'll never make everybody happy. I know that everybody's going to have a slightly different idea about what they think is the biggest priority. But at the end of the day, people are going to look and say, well, okay, but what is being accomplished? What are we seeing? How is the city? Is the city just, just stagnant, or is the city moving forward? Is it getting things done? And that's what I'm looking at. I mean, we've got some, we've got projects in the hopper now. I get so excited about. We're looking at East Dearborn. That whole East Dearborn downtown is going to start to see a huge change as we're working with a group of investors who are local, who've got some commitment to that. We're looking at a lot of other things. We've created new opportunities. We have two DDAs, but now we have two corridor development authorities. So we have five different business districts which have the capacity to develop on their own or to work with the city, but have direct input as to how that area that they represent should be transformed. How should it go forward? What are the best ways for it to be successful, not only now, but into the future?
In dealing with our, again, local surrounding communities, Dearborn Heights in particular, I know there's a lot of camaraderie as well as working together on just city official days, meet your local city officials and so on. Do you find that some of the challenges that we're facing here in this community really are sort of universal to this area, frankly?
Of course they are. I mean, that's the thing I was saying earlier, is this idea that we're all off isolated or we're unique. It's part of the whole process. I mean, you said, largely in our area or around us, things are pretty much built out, and that's true, but things are being torn down and rebuilt too, and that's the thing that people have to realize. What is doesn't mean that defines what can be, and that's what we have to stay with, is what. First, you have a vision. So one of the things I did is I get a bunch of people from all parts of the city. But what we've done twice is we said, what do we have to do now? What are the things that if we do them now, they're going to make us stronger 10 years down the road? And then we develop a plan around that, and we start to use that as a catalyst to start discussions. Okay, well, how would we achieve that? What would that do? How would we modify this? Because most governments that have failed for two reasons. One, they do only one budget. They only pass one budget a year, and they don't look beyond that, which is a huge mistake. And then the other thing is they don't have something that they can pull out of. I can pull right out of my desk our most recent one, and it's got a 10-year plan for what we'd like to see happen. Not that everything in it is going to be executed, but it keeps reminding us of what are those opportunities that we've all agreed would be powerful assets to moving Dearborn forward. So again, you have to have that long-term vision, or you're never going to get you're never going to be able to transform to meet the new challenges and the new opportunities.
Building on that, in terms of looking long-term and looking towards the future, some of the things, landscapes change, economies change, populations shift, things happen, political landscapes change. We're going to, one way or the other, have a new governor in Lansing at some point. And what happens in Lansing and what happens in state government has a large impact on cities and communities. And not to make it political and say, good things, bad things that have, been going on. But when we do have, a new governor, what is the process for a city like Dearborn in terms of, getting to know that person? Because it's a large and important community in the state of Michigan. And what would be your hopes, from Lansing in the next, 8 years or so?
Well, we've had good access with the current governor, and I'm going to work at that. Make sure that we get off on the right foot, no matter what, and that we work together. I think if I were analyzing from the point of view I'm at now, as to how government works or doesn't work, I think the biggest problem we have is that we've bifurcated all these functions. So that this is the county's function, this is the city's function, this is the state's function, and so on. And it's really, really a bad way to look at how we address the needs of the citizens, because it's like right now with potholes and so on. I mean,
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
it should be something where we're coming together, we're working together, or we have some kind of sense of. How can we achieve the best outcomes for the money that we have to spend? And that's really the way we do it is really making it much less likely that we're going to really achieve what we're saying we want to get done.
Well, and when potholes aren't fixed, the mayor's often the person they think of in terms of who to call. I remember seeing an article in the Press and Guide where they're laying out, okay, these roads are maintained by the state, these roads are maintained by the county, these roads are maintained by the city, and how to meet the expectations from the public who really doesn't care who owns them. They just want that pothole gone.
Right, and that's exactly, you said the magic words, the public doesn't care and they shouldn't have to care. And that's my position. I mean, when we had that freeze thaw and we had a lot more, we went out and did some of the county roads and stuff because even though they weren't ours, the city, I mean, we just can't have people having their cars ruined here. So we helped them. And I'm not saying they weren't doing
correct
what they could do. They were doing what they could afford to do at that time. And we met with them, and they were, they actually went out and decided to add on some contractors, outside contractors beyond their own, to try and start to address this. But the point is, we're all doing it in isolation. This unit, this unit, this unit. But the funding comes from the same source. The taxpayers.
Right.
So we really need to start, saying, okay, let's plan together. Let's sit down and create, some real visional way of saying these we agree are, this is the priorities, this is what we have to do, this is how we have to do it. And the other thing that kills me is we also have to be realistic that it's going to cost money and we're going to have to come up with the money. And, when they want to give people back their taxes, and I'm going, but these are the same people are saying, you're ruining my car. I mean, what's more important,
I'll get a bigger refund, but I'm going to have to buy new tires or new hubcaps or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, as we move forward, we are excited to be showcasing some of the things that are going on here in the Dearborn community. And Mayor O'Reilly, we've gotten into some pretty heavy issues here. I'd like to, in our last few minutes here, talk a little bit about one of the things that we are known for as a community and that so many people come together on in such a beautiful way, and that is the arts. The view from Dearborn and the arts is just, it's fantastic, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, yeah, and I'm so excited. I mean, we've got this Arts Week now that is now a whole, it's not a week, we started as a week now, it's a whole a month. And it's got so many things going on all through there. I hope you've seen the brochure that's out,
mm-hmm.
but gosh, all the way through we've got activity after activity, every kind of, thing related to the arts, and that's so exciting. It's going to continue because people do gravitate to those opportunities. They do want to see and what's going on and be part of, which is the other thing, which is really nice at the level we're at, is they can engage and be part of it. And so I'm so pleased. And again, that was done not by the city of Dearborn so much as by people, the city, with support from all kinds of different performers, different entities, people who wanted to sponsor certain types of opportunities for people to come and see art they may have never seen before or music that they've never heard before. All those kinds of things that enrich us. And then, the whole idea that, we have, the other thing I'm very proud of is, the fact that we're actually one of a couple of communities statewide who are up for recognition as healthy communities, And, we've been now, we're in our fourth year of Healthy Dearborn, and in so many ways, and now the state has determined that they're going to award somebody, and we're in the, I can't remember how many, maybe there's five or so that are in the first pass, but they're going to be announcing this next week, who's there, and Dearborn's one of the ones up for that, and it's been great watching the Healthy Dearborn program go too. I mean, people get excited, they've gotten engaged, they've been creative in how they spread the word. So again, I think in Dearborn, what I love is that our school boards, our other groups, everybody who's here in Dearborn is part of Dearborn, and our relationship between like the city and the school districts, I mean, we're like one. I'm over there all the time. I'm on some of the committees, and they're involved with us. That doesn't happen everywhere. People don't realize, but we're really blessed that we have such an integration of interest and support. Those are things. And this arts program, the event program, is just shows how many. I mean, there's almost anything you can imagine related to the arts is available during this period.
And as you mentioned, not directly, city initiatives, but things that have come out in a way that the city certainly supports. And I think that energy and that expectation that support is available, even if it's moral support for the sake of growing these different activities and things, it's a sort of like a symbiotic, sort of a positive synergy kind of a thing. So I almost feel like you kind of can't have one without the other.
Yeah. And then our Chamber of Commerce, again, chambers, some in other places, I talk to other mayors and stuff, and they kind of do their own thing. And they're here, we're right with them every step of the way. They embrace being part of the community, meaning the municipal part and the school part and all of those things. So the integration we have here in Dearborn, where all these different interests and parties and support groups are all kind of supporting each other and promoting each other. That's to me really special. That's really what defines to me, what is Dearborn. We're all on the same page. We all want to move everybody in a positive direction.
Well, Mayor O'Reilly, you've been a great supporter of our radio station, WHFR. We've partnered on some things, certainly, over the years, and love having you in every single radiothon Friday. So we're very grateful for your time today. And, you know, hopefully this wasn't too painful being on the phone today, but we really appreciate your time so much.
Oh, no, no. It's just that it's always nice to see you in person.
Aww.
But the message is the message, so that's it. But I appreciate the opportunity, and again, like I said, you're an essential part. Some years ago we talked about how we could get you into get your center part of our overall alert system and communication system. But anyway, I think you do great. You provide great service to our, you're providing opportunities for entertainment and information for our community members, right here at home, and it's great.
Well, we do say we are a community radio station, both our campus community and certainly our Dearborn community, our community at large. Do note also that should the opportunity for talks come up again to rekindle that that spark of moving forward something with the emergency alert, we're ready when you guys are ready. So we'll talk about that.
We've implemented the new state-of-the-art program. It's we've made the transition to the top of the line systems, and I think now as we're getting that up and we're running through it and doing all that, we may have that chance to have that conversation.
Wonderful. Well, this conversation has been very informative. We're so appreciative of your time. We thank you so much for continued success of what you're doing, leading our community, and we look forward to the chance to be able to catch up again sometime soon.
Oh, well, good. Anytime. I'm here and available. If you try and get me on some of the social media things, I'm not quite on all of them yet. So that's the one thing I'm a little slow on.
No worries. There's others that are a little too fast on that, might I say. But glad you're here.
One could probably all name right. Get more sleep and stuff.
No kidding. Well, thank you again. We've got more on the way. Again, Mayor Jack O'Reilly joining us for the past half an hour or so on the new WHFR Journal. Stay with us. We have more things to come right here on 89.3 on your FM dial. Thanks for staying with us on this, the new WHFR Journal, this Radiothon edition. Well, we are asking you, of course, to continue your vote of support for WHFR Radio as we navigate through the latest music, the most interesting talk formats around the local area. And here's something that we get to do on WHFR that is unique, rare, and I think quite wonderful. We call it Imagine the Possibilities, and we've talked about this very interesting topic in the past, and this time around, it is one of our wonderful non-traditional career seminars in the health professions. So what does this mean to us? It's an opportunity to learn about possibilities in different career fields that you just might not think about. And in this day and age, believe it or not, they're still out there. Well, I have the experts in studio with us at this time, and we are joined by Diane Green and Brenda Hildreth, and they are both wonderful representatives of Henry Ford College in the counseling department, and here to talk about how you can, in fact, imagine the possibilities. This is an exciting conference, ladies. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Good to be here.
Diane, you have been a regular on our show, and that's why we love having this new WHFR Journal, in talking about opportunities for people that might not consider certain career areas. They're all special, they're all unique, but I'm telling you, when we get into the health profession ones, we always think, oh, the tide is changing, it's shifting. But it's not shifting all that much, is it, in terms of opportunities for people that just might not consider a job in health careers?
It really isn't. While we've seen some movement, it hasn't been as significant as we would like, because for certain ones of these areas, we're still wanting to see more men pursuing certain ones of our areas of study. For example, our medical assistant program. We have not come close to meeting the percentage of young men that we would like to see going into this particular area. While nursing, we're seeing more men go into that area, and the physical therapy, perhaps even more. But then the other areas are still wanting for young men to consider these non-traditional areas of work for them, non-traditional areas of study for them to come in. We are now, of course, opening this up to the public, but our focus is on wanting to introduce young men to the wide variety of program opportunities we have here. And it's extensive. It really is.
And the job opportunities beyond the program opportunities, I understand, are they're out there.
They're very high. And with each of the programs, the placement rate for graduates is really quite high. So students coming through our programs pretty much are looking at having a placement upon completing their program of study. And not too many areas can give you that kind of guarantee when you actually complete a program of study.
Yeah, I think warranted is bragging about our health careers programs because it's wonderful, as
they
we
are.
Know. It is wonderful. But certainly the jobs change, you know, sort of they cycle in and they cycle out in terms of some of the specialties and components.
Correct.
But we know that our coursework is keeping up with that. And I think that's probably lends to why our students are so marketable, because it really is cutting edge.
It really is. And a lot of that has to do with accreditation. Accreditation teams are constantly in assessing, reevaluating the programs, and making sure that they, in fact, are keeping pace with the standards in the various professions. The programs also have very active advisory committees. And I sit on a number of those committees, and it's wonderful to see the numbers of people coming from the hospitals and clinics to serve on the advisory committee, and the programs getting firsthand information from the professionals themselves in terms of cutting-edge equipment that they need to consider purchasing, things that they can donate to the programs in support of their training. And I think all of that helps to keep the programs in line with what the trends are in the field at the time.
Yeah. For someone that is interested in considering a profession in health careers, male or female, doesn't matter, how does this specific seminar, this particular event, help them learn more about it? What exactly are we going to find out here?
What we have tried to do is pull together an action-packed day. And we always start off with a free continental breakfast to make sure everybody's tummies are full. Excuse me. Then the attendees are actually introduced to the lead faculty and to students who are actively matriculating or who have graduated from the programs. And they talk about their program, the admission requirements, the expectations once they're in the programs. The students talk about their personal and educational experience in going through the program. They have an opportunity to visit some of the labs, which are really selling points. You take a student into the Surge Tech Lab, and that's pretty overwhelming in itself to see all of these instruments, medical instruments, you know, lining the tables, and they get very curious and they ask more questions. So it gives them an opportunity to have their questions answered, to be able to see firsthand what some of these labs look like. We have the ophthalmic tech program. And sometimes people think about eyes as, well, they're eyes. That's not like, you know, maybe being a nurse. But the students, once they get into the lab and start looking at all of this equipment, the level of interest just rises. So it gives them a firsthand introduction to the actual programs we have and what they're going to experience in those programs. And I think it's fabulous.
Oftentimes, I hear students say, My grandmother was a nurse. My mother was a nurse. They want me to be a nurse. But I don't want to be a nurse. I want to do something else. I like helping people, but I want to do something. This is going to be one of those opportunities to see these specialties, like
That's
you said,
right.
And actually maybe be able to go back to mom and say, you know, there are some opportunities in this particular pharmacy tech or radiography or physical therapy or whatever, and they'll be able to back it with some facts, yes?
Yes. And what's even more interesting is we oftentimes have students come in, don't we, Brenda, who say, well, I'm going into the physical therapy program. And when the day is up and we have a summation closure takeaway point. So what is your takeaway? You know, I'm really thinking about that ophthalmic tech, you know, which is like 180 degrees. Mm-hmm. But the idea of being introduced to something they had not really thought about or maybe didn't even know about is just, it's great to watch the lights go on. So it's a great event.
Nice. As we move through the program, and it's a very thorough agenda that I'm looking at, and you've touched on so many of these different components, I noticed that Chad Austin will come in at some point and talk about career, actual sort of completing the loop, right? Career
Absolutely.
Opportunities.
Absolutely. And he's one of our hot numbers on the program because he comes in and just, you know, just does a fabulous job.
I can't wait to tell him that you called him a hot number on the radio. He's going to love that.
You know, but the students just eat up his presentation because I think a lot of folks don't realize, even current students don't realize, we have a career services office that can also be extremely helpful in learning how to do that letter of application and making it look good and that resume that makes sense and how to dress. And he just has them captivated when he does his presentation. It's just pretty amazing. But that's a good thing because then they know that service is there, as you put it, to complete the loop. You know, I come in and when I go out, these are the things I need to be able to do. And he paints that path for them very clearly.
Nice. Speaking about completing the loop, there's some lunch at the end of the event.
Oh.
I know we get into program admissions again, talking about how to enroll, right? And then
yes.
And we wrap up with a fun, some lunch and some prizes too, yes?
Yes.
Wow.
And you know, we just went through the door prizes the other day. Cynthia Anderson, who works with us, she's the prize lady. I said, I got the prizes. So she came in and we went through them. And we got a lot of really nice stuff we're going to be giving away to the attendees. And they'll be eating lunch while we're pulling their numbers.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, this event, all the excitement is going to culminate on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, the 18th of April. So it really is right around the corner.
It really is.
And I look forward to, Brenda's been quiet letting us go through this part of it, but I look forward to bringing Brenda in just a moment to talk about some things related as well. But does someone need to call ahead, Diane, to enroll in this? And it starts very early, 7:30 all the way till about 1:15 right here on our campus on Wednesday.
Correct. We encourage people to call in and register, but we certainly will take walk-ins. We welcome anyone that shows up at the door. We do have numbers that individuals can call. They can give Cynthia a call, and that number is 313-845-9629. And you can also email her if that is a preferred way of doing it. And it's C. Ara Anderson, her last name, Anderson, the number 4, at hfcc.edu. And then Brenda Rattinger, who is our administrative assistant in our Assisted Learning Services office, will also take calls. And Brenda can be reached at 313-845-9617. And her email address is B as in boy, Rattinger, R-E-D-I-N-G-E-R, Again, that's at hfcc.edu. Okay, so we do encourage you to call or email, but if that's not convenient or you decide at the spur of the moment, I'm going to go over to the college for this program. Come on over. We will indeed welcome you as well.
Imagine the possibilities, non-traditional careers in the health professions. It takes place this Wednesday at the Hackett Conference Room here on the HFC campus. It's in the Health Careers Education Center, Building G, which, if you come in the, south side of the campus, as you sort of, before you get to the turn there, it'll be on the right-hand side. There should be, I think you can see the sign that says Building G on it as you drive by, G150, and that's coming up on Wednesday starting at 7:30 a.m.
And the beauty of this whole thing is that it's absolutely free.
Absolutely free. Only thing it costs you is your energy and a few footsteps.
All right.
So join us.
Easy enough. Well, the second person on the list, just after registration in the Continental Breakfast, is our own Dr. Brenda Hildreth, and we have had the pleasure of talking with you before about the entity on campus that you coordinate, and that's the SOS, Student Outreach and Support, with the Women's Recognition Luncheon and so on. But you're going to be talking at this specific event about opportunities. Maybe some of the potential students that are coming have some concerns, have some needs, need some resources. I like the fact that you're up front on this agenda, yes, because we kind of can get some of that stuff out of the way so they can open their minds and focus on all the other important things that they need to have as takeaways once you get those questions answered. So what will your approach be at the event on Wednesday?
I always enjoy it because it gives me an opportunity to share the information with the potential students that will inform them of all of the services we have that are in place to make sure that they're successful. And I'm hoping that will make them feel more at ease, because just coming on a college campus can be intimidating for some people. So I think that it's a great idea that we do have that information to share with them at the very beginning, because it does make them feel, oh, wow, if I do come here, I know I'm going to get some help.
Nice. And this is open to people of all ages, so there could be people, high schoolers.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah, sure.
Who's the audience? Is this current HFC students who may not have figured out what they want to do as a major? Is it high school students? Is it people who are looking to go back to school and maybe looking for a career?
It's all of the above, including career changers. We get a lot of career changers.
And there's where you say about people coming onto a college campus, how it can be intimidating. If you haven't been on a college campus in 20 years, absolutely. I remember that when that happened to me, actually. So, yeah, absolutely.
Or if you're the first in your family to come on a college campus.
That's a good point. Yeah. Excellent point, yeah. Well, we know there are services available. We've talked about them before. We know that you're going to share some of them, again, at the event on Wednesday. But I had the pleasure of thoroughly reading. I was actually eating lunch and had the pleasure of just sitting down, looking at my computer, and I was like, oh, the SOS newsletter. So I enjoyed reading that. Tell us a little bit about this component of your job and the work that you do with supporting students on our campus.
The purpose of the newsletter is to make sure that the campus knows all of the different services that are available to them through the counseling division. I'm always amazed when I find out that some students don't realize that counselors are on campus. They're aware of the advisors, but not the counselors. And so this is a way of bringing to their attention that we do have counselors on campus, and we're very busy. One of the activities some of the information that we share will include information on funding that is available to students, on trips out of the state to conferences that are free to students. All they have to do is show an interest, and everything is paid for. So there are a number of different opportunities and services that we talk about in detail in the newsletter.
Very nice. One of the areas that I found interesting is related to the Perkins funding and how certain areas of study fall under the category of Perkins grant money. And I understand we have some available. How are we going to talk about that? How are we going to address that? How are we going to spend the money?
Money.
Ellen, we want to spend the money.
Oh, we'll spend it. The Perkins is available to students who find that they're in some financial crisis that could possibly result in them dropping out of school.
Is this state or federal funding or private foundation?
I think it's federal money that is funded through the state through the various colleges. And we're fortunate to be one of those colleges. The money, once it's received by students, can be used for any number of things. It can be used for car repair. Maybe they're behind on their rent. They need to pay their rent. The list goes on. We know they can't study without lights, and so we will pay light bills and gas bills and all of those things if they qualify.
Okay. How would one find out if they qualify?
Things that we look for is their GPA, and we don't ask a lot. We just ask that they have a 2.0, which is a C average. They also have to be a current student. It's very important that they be in what we call a state-approved program, and that can include a lot of the programs we used to refer to as vocational, like auto repair, the health services, the technology programs, criminal justice, accounting, just a wide variety of different programs. They're so numerous, there are pages of them. That's one of the reasons why they really need to come in to see me.
Okay. And where can we find you, Brenda? And at what point in someone's need process should they reach out? For example, if my bill is 2 months past due, is it too late to reach out, or if I know I'm not going to be able to pay next month, is that when I should be looking
for
you?
It's not too late.
Okay.
We're trying to close our books, so to speak, by the 20th. So there is time still for students to come and see if they do qualify.
20th of April?
Yes.
So literally right around the corner.
Right. Yeah. It's next week.
Okay. So this is timely. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Interesting. So how do they reach you in your office?
I'm in Building A, room 125.
Okay. Easy enough. What kind of information do you know is available on our college website as it relates to the SOS or room numbers and that kind of thing? Can we send people just to our website and they can do a search for that?
They can go to the website and they'll find us.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. hfcc.edu. Easy enough. Mm-hmm. All right. Wow. Ladies, very informational. Again, this is our radio pledge drive week, so we are sort of tooting our own horn, if you will, as to all the wonderful things that we get to do, having a radio station here on our campus community, as we call it. And really, this is truly one of my favorite aspects, being able to showcase some of the wonderful things going on here at Henry Ford College. We love other public stations. We love commercial stations for what they do. But there is really no other station around that gets to be this local and this specialized in reaching potential students, current students, and our community. Because
absolutely,
that's what we do. Right.
Yes. So. And it's nice to be riding along and just tune you in.
Right.
Well, thank you. We'll take that. We'll take it. Any last minute words? We again want to invite listeners, if you hadn't even considered coming to an event like our Health Careers Imagine the Possibilities seminar, pop on over again Wednesday, April 18th, starting at 7:30, and perhaps give a call in advance just to let us know you're coming. We'll make sure we have enough food and all that.
Absolutely.
And then again, the SOS is available to any current students on campus with the need-based situation, as well as some of the criteria that we can talk through when we find Brenda on campus.
Great.
All right.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, ladies, for your
time.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Great success spending that money. Great success with the seminar. And we know you'll come back and tell us more as follow-up happens. Yes?
Okay.
Yes.
We will do that.
Excellent.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure. Thank you. Okay. We've got more on the way as we get ready to wrap up this Radiothon edition of the new WHFR Journal. Please stay with us.
It's the new WHFR Journal on the station that's always making waves, 89.3. And especially during this, our Radiothon week, we want you to not just be a listener, we want you to get engaged and support this radio station by making your pledge of support. You can call us at 313 313- 845-9676, and then press option 1. And probably the easiest and simplest way and quickest way to do it is to just go to the website at whfr.fm, and you can pledge your support there. There's all sorts of information on pledge levels and premium, the thank you gifts that we have to offer, including that WHFR hoodie, which maybe we don't need today, but you're going to need later this weekend, that's for sure. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw, Josh Hebert joining us today. We've got, as we wrap up this program, a quick roller hockey update, because it's Nationals week,
it right? is. You might need that hoodie in Fargo, North Dakota, where these boys are playing.
I'm sure.
Roller hockey Nationals started out this morning at 7 a.m., where Henry Ford took on Saddleback College. Mm-hmm. The afternoon schedule is looking like this. 3:15, they'll take on West Valley College. And at 9:45 tonight, they'll take on St. Louis Community College. And then tomorrow at 12:15, they'll take on Merrimack Community College.
And then is this a round-robin portion of it, or is it just whoever tops the standings after they complete the play in the tournament?
That is not exactly clear by the schedule that I received, but I would assume that it would be a round-robin, and then they'll come on and continue on from there.
Awesome. Well, we certainly look forward to hearing great things next week when we talk, right?
Hopefully, we'll have a championship here at HFC.
That would be nice. Well, certainly, I mean, we're all winners, WHFR, HFC. Yes. Obviously, great place, but I'm sure that obviously simply making it in their first season of existence, they've done the college proud, as do all of the athletic programs and other events and activities that take place here at HFC.
Also, mirroring the Golden Knights in the NHL, who made the playoffs in their first year
there
of existence.
You go. Absolutely. All right. Thanks for joining us, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
We'll spend more time next week talking with Gwen Burton, women's basketball coach, and Rochelle Taylor, the athletic director here at HFC.
Hopefully we have good news for you next week about this roller hockey, too.
We look forward to seeing you again. This is the new WHFR Journal. Stay tuned. Kitty Love is going to take a trip down Highway 61. There's going to be a few toll booths to go through when you're driving down Highway 61, because it is Radiothon week, and we hope that you'll pay and show your support for the station that's always making waves, WHFR. Have a great weekend.
This is WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to the magic of radio. South of Memphis, Tennessee.